This morning, we continue with another story from the book of Judges. The time of Judges is the interim period between the death of Joshua, a very short time when leadership was by a group of elders, and the later rule of kings. Today's story centres around Gideon, the warrior farmer. We heard just snippets from a longer tale, but enough to pick up the main points of the story. There are definite trust issues in this week's story. While we hear in other parts of Scripture that we should not put the Lord to the test, here it happens repeatedly. We have divine barbecues and magical fleeces and Midianite dreamers, and the Lord deploys these to assure the young Gideon that he really is with Gideon in taking the fight to the Midianites. Gideon is threshing wheat in secret when the angel visits. The Israelites have been driven out of their homes by Midianite raiders, their animals killed and their crops destroyed. And the angel has come to tell Gideon that he is God's chosen one to save his people from their desperate situation. Gideon's more than taken aback. He's just a small farmer with no experience of leading, and his tribe are tiny in comparison to others. But God doesn't seem to think that this is a problem. He has chosen Gideon and set him the task of pulling down the altar to Baal and building the altar to God. He's then to take on the Midianites. But not only has he to do this, he's going to do it with only 300, not the 32,000 that Gideon manages to amass. Gideon in the end succeeds in his task, and the Midianites are defeated. It's a great tale of success by the seemingly small and weak against the big and the brutish. But all the way through the tale, Gideon is full of doubts. Gideon has what we might call trust issues, and he puts God to the test over and over again. Gideon takes a bit of convincing that God is serious about him being the one to lead the battle with the Midianites. Young Gideon, little more than a boy, chosen and used by God. Another unexpected hero in God's story. Last week, when considering the story of Deborah, we thought about how women had often been written out of history and how so few had a significant place in the Bible. I also spoke about how women were not alone in being silenced and that young people often are not listened to or taken seriously. Well, the young people of the world stood up on Friday and demanded to be taken seriously, led by a diminutive young girl from Sweden. A year ago, Greta Thunberg came to the world's attention by going on strike and not attending school on Fridays. Her protest was at the lack of action on climate change. On Friday, it is estimated 4 million young people and their supporters took to the cities and towns across the world, including here in Aberdeen, joining in Greta's protest and demanding that the world starts to take the climate emergency seriously. A diminutive young girl leading an army of millions against one of the world's greatest dangers, a 16-year-old girl. Let that sink in. And she's not the first young person to have influence. In our Bibles, we have Joseph, Gideon, David, Mary, mother of Jesus. And thinking about through history, Joan of Arc was the same age as Greta Thunberg when she led an army. Anne Frank's diary became a seminal book in the lives of many young people as part of the reading curriculum. And even more recently, we've had Malala Yousafzai win the Nobel Peace Prize at the same age Greta is now. Young people changing the world. I want to talk more about Greta Thunberg and her story. In August 2018, she started her school strike for the climate outside the Swedish Parliament building. And since then, her movement has grown, and all over the world, her Friday protests regularly involves over 100,000 school children. The movement's now called Fridays for Future. Friday's day of protest was an extension of that. You cannot help but be impressed by Greta. At such a young age, this introverted girl who lives with autism is changing the world. She's inspiring young and old in her drive to keep climate change high on the agenda and demanding that world leaders take action. Now, of course, not everyone loves Greta, and she's had some terrible things said about her on social media. I would suggest by people who feel threatened by her. But Greta is undeterred. Her cause is something that she cannot and will not give up on. It's too important to her. And we need to listen to what she has to say, because we will rue the day if we dismiss Greta as a jumped-up, indulged teenager with a gobby mouth. She's none of these. She is a bright, intelligent, eloquent, and determined young lady. Perhaps she's more like Deborah than Gideon, but surely she is a modern-day judge and prophet. An example, again, of God sending the most unlikely into dealing with the biggest issues facing his people. Greta is a judge and prophet, and we need to listen to her. And as a start, I want to share with you some of what Greta has had to say, in effect turning the rest of my sermon over to her and her words. The first quote comes from a TED talk that Greta gave in Sweden last November. And she opened up by saying this: "When I was about 8 years old, I first heard about something called climate change or global warming. Apparently, that was something humans had created by our way of living. I was told to turn off the lights to save energy and to recycle paper to save resources. And I remember thinking that it was very strange that humans, who are an animal species among others, could be capable of changing the Earth's climate. Because if we were, and if it was really happening, we wouldn't be talking about anything else. As soon as you turn on the TV, everything would be about that: headlines, radio, newspapers. You would never read or hear about anything else, as if there was a world war going on. But no one ever talked about it. If burning fossil fuels was so bad that it threatened our very existence, how could we just continue like before? Why were there no restrictions? Why wasn't it made illegal? To me, that did not add up. It was too unreal. So when I was 11, I became ill. I fell into depression. I stopped talking and I stopped eating. In 2 months, I lost about 10 kilos of weight. Later on, I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, OCD, and selective mutism. This basically means I only speak when I think it is necessary. Now is one of those moments. For those of us who are on the spectrum, almost everything is black or white. We aren't very good at lying, and we usually don't enjoy participating in the social games that the rest of you seem so fond of. I think in many ways that we autistic are the normal ones, and that the rest of the people are pretty strange. Especially when it comes to the sustainability crisis, where everyone keeps saying that climate change is an existential threat and the most important issue of all, and yet they carry on just as before. I don't understand that, because if the emissions have to stop, then we must stop the emissions. To me, that is black or white. There are no grey areas when it comes to survival. Either we go on as a civilization or we don't. We have to change. And then just days ago, when addressing the US Congress, Greta said this: "I also have a dream that governments, political parties, and corporations grasp the urgency of the climate and ecological crisis and come together, despite their differences, as you would in an emergency, and take the measures required to safeguard the conditions for a dignified life for everybody on Earth. Because then we, millions of school-striking youth, could go back to school. I have a dream that people in power, as well as the media, start treating this crisis like the existential emergency it is, so that I could go home to my sister and my dogs, because I miss them. In fact, I have many dreams. But this is the year 2019. This is not the time and place for dreams. This is the time to wake up. This is the moment in history when we need to be wide awake. And yes, we need dreams. We cannot live without dreams. But there's a time and place for everything. And dreams cannot stand in the way of telling it like it is. And yet, wherever I go, I seem to be surrounded by fairy tales. Business leaders, elected officials all across the political spectrum, spending their time making up and telling bedtime stories that soothe us, that make us go back to sleep. These are feel-good stories about how we're going to fix everything, how wonderful everything is going to be when we've solved everything. But the problem we are facing is not that we lack the ability to dream or to imagine a better world. The problem now is that we need to wake up. It's time to face the reality, the facts, the science. And the science doesn't mainly speak of great opportunities to create the society we wanted. It tells of unspoken human sufferings, which will get worse and worse the longer we delay action, unless we start to act now. And yes, of course, a sustainable, transformed world will include lots of new benefits. But you have to understand, this is not primarily an opportunity to create new green jobs, new businesses, or green economic growth. This is, above all, an emergency, and not just any emergency. This is the biggest crisis humanity has ever faced. And we need to treat it accordingly, so that people can understand and grasp the urgency, because you cannot solve a crisis without treating it as one. Stop telling people that everything will be fine when in fact, as it looks now, it won't be very fine. This is not something you can package or sell or like on social media. Stop pretending that you, your business idea, your political party or plan will solve everything. We must realize we don't have all the solutions yet. Far from it. Unless those solutions mean that we simply stop doing certain things. But how can we solve a problem that we don't even fully understand? How can we leave out the full picture and the current best available science? I believe there is a huge danger in doing so. And no matter how political the background to this crisis may be, we must not allow this to continue to be a partisan political question. The climate and ecological crisis is beyond party politics. And our main enemy right now is not our political opponents. Our main enemy now is physics. And we cannot make deals with physics. Everybody says that making sacrifices for the survival of the biosphere and to secure the living conditions for future and present generations is an impossible thing to do. Perhaps it is impossible. But look at those numbers. Look at the current best available science signed by every nation. Then I think this is precisely what we're up against. But you must not spend all of your time dreaming or see this as some political fight to win. And you must not gamble your children's future on the flip of a coin. Instead, you must unite behind the science. You must take action. You must do the impossible, because giving up can never be an option. I make no apology for those two lengthy quotes from Greta. Greta has the right to have her voice heard and her words spoken and not paraphrased. She is a young woman that is speaking out, and we need to listen. She is a modern day judge and prophet. I have no idea if she is a Christian or belongs to any faith community, but remember all the people that God uses in his story that come from the least expected places, often outside, in the Bible, the Jewish community. Deborah, Gideon and Greta, unlikely heroes in God's story. Can we be inspired by them to do our bit? Can we be inspired by them to trust God and to play our part in his continued story? Can we? Amen.